Welcome back, Energy Insiders. This is your host, Chris Sass, and I'm here today to let you know about a change that took place on the Insider's Guide to Energy podcast. Recently, we separated out the content from our EV series and made it to its own full-length podcast. You can get it wherever you subscribe to your podcast, but you do need to subscribe. Occasionally, like today, we're going to play an episode here for you to get a feel for the content, but there's over 30 episodes of content that's already released. There's new content in production, and it's a fantastic show. So if you have any interest in EVs, it's your source. Insider's Guide to Energy EV podcast. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, and we hope you enjoy this episode.
I don't think it's overstating it to say that the transition to electric vehicles will live or die by the success of the secondhand market. It's where 80% of all cars are bought and sold. It's where finance rates for new cars originate from, and consumer confidence is critical to its stability and predictability, an area we are working to urgently address as used EVs begin to hit the market at volume.
Broadcasting from Washington, D.C., this is Insider's Guide to Energy.
This episode of Insider's Guide to Energy EV miniseries is powered by PAWA. PAWA helps your business transition to electric vehicles by simplifying charging, managing payments, and optimizing your charging data.
That is a bold statement to start with, Patrick, and we would love to understand more about the value and importance of the secondhand car market. But can you tell us firstly, what's different when you buy a secondhand electric car to buying a secondhand petrol or diesel car?
Certainly. Well, there's a number of things that are different. I think for consumers, this is all still very new, and it's quite deeply ingrained in is all what it's like to buy or own or drive a petrol or a diesel car. And certainly the process of buying one, I think people have either, I don't know, family associated or some sort of osmosis gathered intel on which makes a good manufacturer and a good model and which doesn't. And when the car is electric, it's quite a different ball game altogether. All of a sudden, you've got brand new manufacturers, brand new models you've never heard of, and you've got people who, for example, have always been a Mercedes guy or a BMW guy, all of a sudden considering one of the Korean entrants and those types of players that they've never considered in the past. And so it's kind of like a hard reset has happened with buying an EV more broadly. And when the car is used specifically, a number of those extra considerations are sort of cascading down. And I think confidence and really knowing what you're doing is not in the same place as it would be for internal combustion. And obviously the big topic that I'm sort of introducing here is around the key difference between an electric vehicle and a petrol and diesel vehicle, and that is the battery pack that powers it. So the price of battery packs is slowly coming down. It's not coming down as quickly as it might have done without COVID disrupting things, but roughly speaking, it's somewhere in the 30-40% of the value of the car area. And consumers have been, I think, used to consumer electronics at this point, iPhones, tablets, laptops, and what have you, with quite limited shelf life in terms of battery health. And people are used to devices lasting 3, 4, 5 years before the battery is usually the first component to give up. And so quite unfairly, I would say, people are applying that lens to electric vehicles. I think because all of this uncertainty exists to begin with, you're kind of on quite unsolid ground to begin with. And so that twinned with, oh, it's got a battery in it, things with batteries in them don't last very long, is causing quite a degree of uncertainty.
So what you're basically saying is when it comes to buying a secondhand electric car, most people don't know what they're doing. So I guess the question back to you is, what can we do about that?
Yeah, so I'm not sure I'd put it in exactly those terms, but certainly I would say you have to do an awful lot of your own research. And so, you know, I think the EV sector on the whole has benefited from the sort of early adopters market being actually quite large. And so a lot of people have been happy to go and do their own research. But as we've moved beyond early adopters, stimulated by tax incentives and things like that, that have found an awful lot of company car drivers and sort of non-EV, dare I say it to your audience, nerds getting behind the wheel. We're sort of in a bit of a different place. And so the information that exists in, well, I think EVs more broadly, but on the topic of battery health is very varied. And, you know, you can Google and find articles which will tell you, don't worry about battery health. You'll find others which will tell you, do worry about battery health, and you kind of end up somewhere in the middle where I think the general consensus is that nobody is disputing that lithium-ion batteries do degrade, but there's a lack of understanding about what causes that and how it's some more extreme in some vehicles than others. But critically, on a specific vehicle itself, I'm talking about, you know, a car by its VIN number and license plate or whatever, data on that car will leave you with very little information about its battery health. You can, in some cases, plug diagnostic bits of kit in and try and understand from the sort of messaging system that exists on cars what the battery management system is saying. But even then, that's very unreliable in most cases. And so what people are kind of being expected to do is look at the range estimate on the dashboard, which most people know is very much an estimate. You'll know, Neil, that people in the industry call it the guessometer. And it's you know, it tries to be intelligent, and I guess it does a good job of that in some cases where it recognizes that you live in a cold place or it's a cold season, and it recognizes that you've got a heavy right foot or you don't, and so it tells you what you as an individual will get out of that car. And so all of that noise really is being layered upon the actual condition of the battery, and it's not really giving you any kind of indication. So the current state of play is that consumers are having to take a bit of a flyer, and to me that's just never seemed sustainable or scalable in any way. You know, that a house is the most expensive thing you'll ever buy, quickly followed by a car. And so we just cannot expect people to part with, you know, tens of thousands of pounds, dollars, or whatever, to buy something which they don't feel confident in.
So I guess to put it in terms that can help me relate better, what kind of mistake are we talking about? So let's assume two EVs come off a lease. They're 3 years old. They both look marvelous. So I go and I look and the carpets are clean. The interior doesn't have any wear and tear. Neither have been in a major accident. What kind of mistake can I make by not understanding the battery health, and what are the economic implications to me or range implications?
Well, that's a good way of putting it, because you can be, you know, let's say you're stood on a dealership forecourt and you've got two cars in front of you that are the same make, model, variant, color, odometer reading, everything about them seems identical. And yet one of those vehicles could have been treated in a totally different way to the other. And when I say treated, there are, you know, think of it as a list of do's and don'ts when it comes to battery health. And one of them could have had lots of big ticks in the do's pile and the other one lots of big ticks in the don'ts pile. And as things stand, you would have no visibility on that. And the ramifications of choosing the wrong one could be enormous for you, because to put it into some kind of perspective, you know, we have, and we'll talk, I guess, in a moment about what we're doing, but with our system, which is designed to provide transparency on this topic, we've tested some vehicles which are less than 2 years old, which haven't done huge amounts of miles, yet are performing way, way worse, like 20% worse than other identical vehicles that we've tested. And we're in a nice phase with our customer base. We're in beta testing, and it's a very two-way dialogue, and we're speaking to the users to really try and understand how that's happened. And as it transpires, the vehicle that I'm just picking out for this example has always been owned by a sales rep who does not have a driveway, and therefore is rapid charging that car all the time, is charging it to 100% whenever she can do, because getting as many miles out of that car per charge is her priority. And then I ask some other questions like, do you use the built-in navigation system, or are you using like Waze or Google Maps or something else? And she's like, oh yeah, absolutely Waze. And so then you understand, well, you know, people listening to this who are a Tesla owner, for example, will know that when you use the navigation system in a Tesla, it knows when you're about to use the supercharger network, and it makes a kind of weird noise and preconditions the battery and gets prepared for that fast state of charge, either by adjusting the temperature to prepare for it. And so, you know, it's really nuanced. These are things that the user in question wouldn't have known is problematic. But back to your point, you know, with those two cars in front of you, you certainly wouldn't want to be buying hers. And so what we're building is a way of identifying that and enabling you to make, as a consumer, a decent value judgment on the vehicles in front of you.
So I can see Chris is still stuck there going, is it the left car or the right car? Can you take us through some of those do's and don'ts you referenced there? You've mentioned rapid charging. You've mentioned charging to 100%. If they're both don'ts, what else is sat in the don'ts bracket? What might we want to consider to optimize battery health for our vehicles?
Well, what batteries really don't like is heat. And so that's really why the guidance of not rapid charging to regularly is there. It's because it causes excess heat in the battery pack, and so do other things like having a particularly heavy right foot. It's not as affecting as sort of poor charging behavior, but it is in the list. Similarly, things like leaving the car in really hot environments. So if you live in California, let's say, and a lot of cars have been tested in California, not by us, but by others, and they show quite high rates of degradation, sort of regardless of the manufacturer. And so the advice for people in those sorts of climates is to try and keep cars in garages and things like that. So yeah, they're probably softer things, but I think charging is the really big area. And yeah, back to the example I mentioned before about using the in-car navigation system as well. As I say, Tesla kind of force you down that road. But if you read OEM manuals about taking care of your battery in the way that sadly I've spent quite a lot of time doing, you'll see that BMW and others advise exactly the same thing. You know, all manufacturers are very cognizant of this and how you ought to be doing your bit to try and maintain decent battery health. I guess it's tricky, and a lot of the things in the do's pile are kind of the enemy of convenience. And so that makes things slightly tricky.
So Patrick, back to the original thought though that I had, where I haven't got my arms around it. So I get that that car that you just described maybe had 20% degradation to its battery compared to its peer. What does that mean to the driver? What is the impact? So I shell out hard-earned cash to buy this vehicle and it's got 20% less battery. What did I just do? What is the impact to me?
Well, I think that range is the big topic and the big thing that is affected by poor battery health. So, you know, to keep the numbers super simple, let's say the good car has 100 miles range on a good day on a full charge. The one that you might buy could be in the 80 mile sort of area, and that 20 miles could be the difference between that car working for you or not. If you have if charging is not a headache to you, then maybe it doesn't matter to you that you will be charging that car way more regularly than the other one. But if you don't have a driveway, for example, and charging is not a convenience for you, then yeah, having a a higher degraded battery that requires more charge sessions and is less capable per full charge is obviously comes at a convenience cost.
What happens if I change the behavior? So we get rid of the sales rep and I give it to Neil over here who trickle charges every night and does everything in the do column. Is it like quitting smoking? Is there some benefit for doing it, or is the car toast? Is that 20%? Is it going to continue to degrade and be a bad performer in the future?
So it's a good question. And unfortunately, the car will not repair itself at that point. That, unfortunately, is out of the question. But whether or not it continues on its downward slope when the behavior changes, that's unlikely. It could be that early damage does persist in future performance, regardless of that behavior change. But generally speaking, by curbing that sort of behavior, you're likely to put a lid on the problem getting much worse.
And Chris is right. I am a super well-behaved electric vehicle charger. I behave myself and do all the right things. So I want to make sure that I'm getting the best value for this vehicle because mine's the one on the right, not the one on the left. What is the service that Clearwatt offers to help an uninformed consumer pick the right vehicle?
Sure. So I should say that what we've built with Clearwatt has been in the making, in development for 3 years at this point, but I've been in the sector for 10 years at this point. So a bit of an old timer really when it comes to electric vehicles, and have seen this problem coming from quite a distance. With my background in car sharing, where we kind of got some quite high level understanding of onboard telematics and onboard CAN bus messaging systems and what is and is not possible in terms of data you can pull from a vehicle. We've embarked on a project to build something which is a software-only methodology of measuring battery health, because we need something that is vehicle agnostic, such that we can launch into the market and be able to service all of the market at once. And B, what we've learned along the way is that the sort of data available from one manufacturer to another is very variable, and variable in terms of quality, accessibility, and all sorts of other things. And thirdly, and critically to the Clearwatt proposition, is the use case needs to be slick and free of barriers. And so how Clearwatt works is as an individual that is motivated to test a vehicle, you would download our app, add your car to the app by its license plate. That creates a perfect match. We know the make, model, and model variant, and critically usable battery capacity of that vehicle when it was new. We then ask you to complete 3 drives with the Clearwatt app running. So each of those drives has a minimum distance, which we auto calculate and inform you of in the app, but it will roughly equate to a 10% change in battery level. So let's say you've got a car that we predict on average would do 200 miles. We'll ask you to do 3 20-mile drives. And at the start and at the end of each of those drives, we will ask you to enter the charge level, which is a number from the dashboard, state of charge. We ask you to take a photo of that. We can verify that that's in the right location, in the right car at the right time. And you completing that trip, having told us the state of charge at the beginning and at the end, tells us lots and lots of information about that trip. So we know exactly how many kilowatt hours of energy you've consumed, and we know exactly how far you've traveled. So that gives us miles per kilowatt hour. That's all very simple and high level. But the clever bit is that we're communicating with your mobile phone in very high frequency, such that you do a 20-30 minute drive, we're receiving thousands of heartbeats from that drive and drawing a highly granular speed trace of your journey. We understand acceleration profile, exactly how you've driven it. We understand the elevation of the roads and the environmental conditions, such that we're getting obviously ambient temperature, wind speed, wind direction, all of the things that influence range. And so we take those thousands of heartbeats. The algorithm that sits underneath it looks for extremities. So let's say that your car, Neil, we would expect, if there is no problem, we would expect for its year and its mileage to be able to achieve something like 3.9 miles per kilowatt hour. If that car, in fact, is only achieving 3.22 miles per kilowatt hour, that would flag, from a raw data collection perspective, that would flag a problem. But then we see you were doing 100 miles an hour the whole time. It was minus 5 degrees outside. We can cancel and account for those extremities such that we're pulling your car back to actually what it's capable of. And then 3 drives is enough for us to get a really good handle on what your car is actually capable of. And the next part of the process is we're then in real time making an assessment of whether that is good, bad, or somewhere in the middle versus the brand new expectation for that car or other similar peer vehicles that we have in our system. So that then enables us to give you a rating for your vehicle. We've devised a highly simplified rating system such that we can integrate into classified websites and other places on quite simple terms, where it goes from A+ to D. We have lots of information on our website about how we calculate that, what that means if people want to read more, but it's quite critical for us to just have a really simple score. And from that, we're able to provide the prospective buyer with the confidence that they need to know, okay, that car's an A+, and the one next to it is not. I know where my hard earned money is going.
How far are we along? So in the US, we have things like Kelley Blue Book value, where a dealer or someone will look up the value of the vehicle in a book to tell you what a used vehicle is worth. How far is this software or this tool to embedding into something like that, where the actual quantifiable numbers are something that a dealership or someone could say, okay, I've got, these used vehicles coming in and your trade-in is going to be worth this, or you're going to get this when we sell it, so they can price the deal accordingly. Is that ABC almost there, or is it within eyesight?
We're in the process of getting there. I think the thing to consider here is that with a proposition like ours, ultimately the person who cares is the person at the end of that resale process, the consumer that is buying a used vehicle. But that is not the person who's testing the car, right? We're having to work way further back the chain to get the Clearwatt report assigned to a vehicle. And so at the moment, we have a number of very interesting commercial pilots underway, one of which is with the largest fleet operator in the UK, who have currently got 50,000 EVs, and that number is set to double pretty soon. And so that's a company that leases cars, right? What we're able to say to them is, okay, so your customers who, let's say they've taken a 3-year lease, and a month before they're due to return the car, when you're sending them emails to say, hey, Mr. X, you've got 1 month left. Go and get the car cleaned, get those chips and scratches repaired. You're also asking them to complete a Clearwatt test, such that and we can find ways of incentivizing that. That client actually has ways of doing that already built into the process. And so, we're saying to that customer, do the test. And so the leasing company and then the next person in the chain to receive that car on resale, which will be probably an auction house, and then the next person, probably a dealership, and then the next person, the end consumer, all of those people have had complete visibility of the condition of the car from day one. That flow of getting the test done early is critical to ensuring that it comes out at the end with all people having that full visibility. And what we're working with those partners to do is to initially provide confidence at auction, such that when dealers are there and they see 2 EVs that are identical in the same example that we gave before, one of them has a Clearwatt report and one of them doesn't, then in that competitive environment, they'll buy the car with the extra documentation. And then what we're working towards then on the consumer side is how do we measure the impact of what that customer will pay for it? There is some research out there on this topic, ranging from a £500 sort of uplift for a decent report, all the way up to $3,000. Some research out in the US that suggests that. So obviously that depends on the price of the car to begin with, and whether it's premium and what have you. But yeah, we're expecting something in the order of you know, £500 to sort of £1,500 on a mid 3-year-old EV, that being the sort of uplift that we could expect.
Now, the scary thing, kind of when you mention this, is I get the value of it when I'm the buyer of the new car, but let's assume that I've leased a car from your leasing company before, and I go to lease a new car, and I scored rather poorly on that vehicle return. You know, I almost see, like, a credit agency rates me that there'd be a driving score associated with an individual driver. So maybe I get better lease terms if I take better care of the battery. But more impractically, I'd be afraid of having that information floating around out there that it's going to cost me money because I didn't charge well.
Well, I mean, you open a whole fascinating topic here in that, you know, can the drivers of leased vehicles or any electric vehicles be have their charging behavior and other battery health related behavior used against them, I can tell you for sure that we're not there today. Whether we ever get there is actually quite an active discussion in the rental and leasing world. But you know, I always say that the questions that you asked me a little while ago about what are in the do's pile, what are in the don'ts pile, that is not common knowledge. You know, people cannot be, in my opinion, punished for overly rapid charging a vehicle if that's the thing that's enabled them to electrify.
You've now got all this incredible data on how a driver performed last time. And almost like the way the health industry has moved towards tracking individuals' behavior sets and then quoted their insurance slightly differently. Do we see a scenario whereby when you get your second or third lease vehicle, you might get quoted differently for your lease terms because we know, Neil, that you charge your battery very carefully on your driveway overnight, whereas Chris is up and down the motorway, rapid charging all the time, and therefore he's going to degrade our vehicle more. So a bit like you get a mileage limit, might you also get a charging behavior characteristic to your leasing rate?
Yeah, all I can say is I know that we're not there today, and we might get there one day. It sounds awfully big brother, but I think what you might see is, you know, if you look to get a car insurance quote and it asks you where you store the car, a question there could be, do you have off-road, off-street parking? And the sort of intel that we're gathering could be used to make some assumptions about how that customer will interact with that car and what that will mean for its long-term health.
That makes complete sense. So I guess where I'm coming from at the moment is your service creates value for the end purchaser of this vehicle, the secondhand car buyer, which I love because I'm a secondhand car buyer. But the service you're actually selling is being sold today to big leasing companies, or is it the individuals you sell to?
To leasing companies. So our primary target today is absolutely not exclusive, but the big fish for us right now is leasing companies, and their motivation is to maximize residual values at resale. And so, that it's on that basis that we're operating.
Now, I wonder why, with all the technology into a car, why aren't the OEMs doing this? Why do we want a third party to come in and rate the batteries? Why can't this be in the software for the vehicle?
Yeah, it's a very good question. And I think really what it initially boils down to is misalignment of a few things, but the first is a misalignment of motivation. Why would OEMs want to surface this data unless all OEMs are forced to, right? Like you wouldn't want to be the first to stick your head above the parapet and categorically outline the long-term performance of your fleet if none of your competitors are being forced to do so. And so that move to expect consumers to do that, to expect OEMs to do that, is something that the legislators and regulators are discussing and have been discussing for some time. There was a suggestion that on-car state of health monitors would be legislated to be included on the dashboard as part of the Euro 7 emissions, but Euro 7 covers the EU only, and those sort of, that legislation didn't align with other parts of the world. As it happens, Euro 7 has been kicked down the road anyway, and so best case scenario is that here in the EU you would have a secondhand car entering the market with one of those on the dashboard at the end of this decade. And the problem is very much here and now. In the UK alone this year, there will be more than 200,000 secondhand EVs sold, and that will continue to accelerate into the millions by way before any onboard devices that the OEMs might implement would be available. So, from a more technical perspective, there isn't today actually is a consensus on how to measure battery health, and so there is no standard from which OEMs could just easily apply to their vehicles. You have all electric vehicles have a battery management system on board, which helps. From a safety perspective, primarily it helps to ensure that cars can't be overcharged and running thermal runaway and things like that from a safety perspective. But the battery management system on board a car is not sophisticated enough to accurately measure battery health as things stand today. It lacks the computational power to do so, and a lot of large OEMs and VCs actually are investing in advanced BMSs to be able to do that. But the application of that is currently being looked at beyond passenger EVs. This is, the likes of huge construction vehicles, let's say, where in some cases there might be millions of dollars worth of batteries on board. It's obviously critically important then to understand all this stuff, but from a scientific perspective, we're some way off that standard being agreed and implemented in all cars. So it's not just about motivation. I think it's the market is lacking standardization to begin with.
So I like the business model and the presentation you've given us of this idea that this is about the second life of the battery and how you ensure that a secondhand car buyer has confidence. It feels to me like there's, with this technology, there's a couple of other applications that could be really interesting to explore. The two that jump to my mind are you've just bought brand new vehicles and you almost want to create a baseline characteristic for them. We worked with a fleet operator who had about 150 vehicles, all of the same type, and three of them he had to send back early because those vehicles just weren't performing as expected. And the second use case is, how do you take that data, maybe provide tips and guidance as to how to optimize battery health for the owner during life, rather than telling them after their 3-year lease that they've horribly degraded the battery? Is that something that's in the plan to develop?
Yeah. So on the first point, I should mention that as I outlined before, our solution is hardware free and app based, and that's a very deliberate move that we've made with accessibility in mind. But we are still training the model from embedded telematics data. So we are also working with some fleets that are feeding us information about vehicles from new, which is helping us to understand what it is that's causing those differences, as you mentioned. And secondly, yes, absolutely. This is probably a good opportunity for a plug. But for anybody who's listening to check out the ClearWatt website, clearwatt.co.uk, where we are, as well as this core technology, we're really positioning ClearWatt as the educators / translators in this space, translators of complex information for the mass market. Because as I always say, you could ask anybody on the street what is the, what's, give me one difference between a 1 liter petrol car and a 2 liter petrol car. And they would, they might say the 2 liter car is probably a bit faster, but a bit thirstier, let's say. That, that kind of knowledge is baked into people. And, but you ask that same person if a 40 kilowatt hour battery is going to be suitable for their everyday needs. You know, 9.9 times out of 10, they won't have a clue what you're talking about, right? And so even at a very basic level, Clearwater exists to translate that kind of information such that we can help people along and help people navigate this very complex area. And in terms of insights, in terms of how to keep batteries performing well, then yes, absolutely. We have... it's not actually launched yet on our website, but we have tools in the planning and tools in development, which will enable people to tell us how they treat their car or how they intend to treat their car if they haven't bought it yet. And the output that we will give them is what they can do to optimize the condition of that car in the end. And you know, perhaps if you do a bit less of this and a bit more of that, then in 3 years' time, you'll get this many more miles on a charge. You know, we do have that data able to do that kind of modeling. And finally, we have, I can't say too much on this, but we have a product evolution in our roadmap, which will help demonstrate and prove that customers are treating their vehicle or the vehicle that they're driving and not necessarily owning in a specific way. Which again, I think people don't know what the good and bad behavior is at the moment. And I think if we can make a really simple, slick, maybe even gamified way of enabling that customer to sort of, you know, to nudge them in the right direction, I think that's better, best for everybody.
So I can hear that you've got something really cool that you've got today and that you're building really cool capabilities as we go forward. I'm going to hand you a crystal ball and ask you, if I came back and had this conversation with you in a year's time, what would have changed? What would Clearwater have delivered between today's conversation and 365 days from now?
Well, 365 days from now, where I think we will be end of Q1 next year is fully integrated into some of the major household name brands that exist here in the UK in the process of buying or selling a used car. Can't say too much on this, obviously, at this point, but these conversations are underway and have been for some time on our side. And, you know, there's a lot of goodwill and a lot of ambition in the sector to help consumers, to help try and solve this confidence gap. And so we're sort of in the right place at the right time, I think, with these conversations, and we'll be looking for full integration by that time. And beyond that, you know, obviously we're focusing right now on the UK market, but you know, there could be scope for us to expand beyond it. Our tech approach facilitates scalability across borders in a way that makes that quite a realistic proposition.
Patrick, I want to thank you so much for spending time with us today and sharing your expertise and knowledge with us. It's been exciting to hear about what you're doing to help folks understand the battery health and to help us better understand buying a used EV. I look forward to seeing your technology widely deployed across the UK and your crystal ball coming clear that we'll see a lot more of you and a lot more of your new programs in the near future. Thank you again.
Thanks, guys. It's been great chatting to you.
For our audience, we hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Insider's Guide to Energy EV series. We tried to make it informative. We hope you've enjoyed the content as much as Neil and I did making this episode. If you do, don't forget to like, add comments, ask questions of our guests in the comments, and definitely follow us on YouTube. By subscribing to our channel, you'll see content like this and content that doesn't get released anywhere else. So we'll see you again next time on the Insider's Guide to Energy EV series. Bye for now.